button. There it is, the other button. There it is. So welcome, Heather Mason. Here we are, May the 12th, on the interview for the upcoming publication by Singing Dragon Press that has the working title of Yoga Radicals, Inspiring Stories from Pioneers in the Field. And so as we center together now, let's just take some time to open sacred space in the way that you know how. Just want to welcome in Minnie. It was nice to meet her earlier.
Thank you.
And to be reminded of the core principles of this practice of conscious moving from me to we, landing in this five-pointed star image where an intention becomes crystallized in the body-mind. The field of possibility or inquiry opens to something more, listening out and in to the universe, linking the intelligences of head and heart, body, mind, and then expanding with others, a core team perhaps, into places and spaces. These landing strips of the future, so that as you now embody your story, the ways in which you bring this wisdom into the world, Heather, to tell our stories in the shared space of how you learned by doing, how you landed. And then inviting in any of your guides and angels and offering some words as we begin from your space there.
So the only words that come from me are just be true.
Okay, cool. Okay, great. Thank you. So the questions really move through like a heroine's journey or a hero's journey, kind of initiation to the connection to how the idea landed, just like I mentioned, and then who else and what did you learn? So I'm going to leave this pretty open for you so that you can feel free, knowing that we've got this 45 minutes to just tell the readers, young, new yogis perhaps, how you got initiated. What was the invocation? What were you thinking and feeling and sensing as you moved into the future, doing these projects, landing, using yoga-based principles, your experience?
Well, the truth is, Allie, and I said that what came up for me is just to be true, is what I was thinking and feeling was a huge amount of suffering. I mean, my yoga journey is born of almost a crack in my psyche and then needing to find a way to make sense of that. It's not a story I often tell, but I actually was on an anti-malarial in Costa Rica by myself at the age of 18, and I had almost a psychotic break off of the back of it, and reality unfolded for me in a way that was so profound, but I didn't have the foundation to manage. And I came back to New York, and I wanted to be admitted into a psychiatric hospital, actually. And this very wise psychiatrist, who I didn't want to go back to because I wanted to be fixed, said, unfortunately, you're describing a very special experience. And although your anxiety is crippling you, you are not psychotic. You're describing very profound things. And all I can do is give you something to manage your anxiety. I was furious. And that sent me to so many different corners of the world, actually. But the very first one was, and without getting to a long story, somebody randomly gave me a ticket to go visit Guru Mai in New York. And I had no expectation of who she was or what I was meant to do there, but I was given a private audience without even asking. So this felt very much like it was karmic for me. And I thought she was going to say, okay, child, I fix you now. And she did it. She said, you must go to India and seek the next stage in your path. Here's a mala practice. I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't understand. And that was it. And then I ended up going to Southeast Asia to do a semester abroad, because I was, at that age, I was 18. So 19, I studied abroad in India. And as part of the study program, I had to practice yoga. And it was like gymnastics to me. I didn't get it. I came back to New York after I finished my complete university education, depressed, despondent, unable to cope with my life from years and years of trauma and depression and anxiety. And I think that's part of the reason that medication kind of cracked me open. It was just like one more thing my system couldn't handle. And after a year in New York, I took off and I went to Asia under the guise of finding a population to study, because I had done an undergraduate degree in anthropology and another in philosophy. And instead, very soon on, I found Buddhist monks and yogi masters who were basically saying, just sit, just be, just breathe. And I spent the next 3 years of my life transforming myself, even wanting to become actually a Buddhist nun. And after 3 years, I thought, okay, if I'm going to give my life completely to the spiritual world and just focus on nirvana or nibbana, if you use Pali, it depends on which one, I want more clarity. And I then came to London to do a master's degree first in Buddhist studies. And I was trying to tell other people how to transform, because it was so surreal to live in the world and not hate myself so much. To have that joy. So I started to become this voice for other people, because I had really been to the depths. I had times in my meditation and yoga practice where I said, well, I'm going to keep going because I would rather die or this, like there's no other. So I'm just going to keep going, because what else could I do? You know, I often think that my yoga journey was informed by that level of pain. You know, if I'm going to be really true, that's what the tour de force was, because the pain was so great that I had to just keep going. I had to just keep going. I had to just keep going. So when I was out of pain, the world became pleasant. And then I was like, well, I'm not sure I want to become a nun. And I keep telling people to go and sit for 3 years in silence, and that's not accessible to them. And that's when my message really started to move through the culinary of yoga instead, because I realized through breathing and through moving, asana and pranayama, that my experience would be more accessible to others, and that the physiological changes would happen more readily. And once you've been, I think, to that depth of suffering inside yourself that you truly want to die, and I sat through that for 2 years, 16 hours a day on and off, for 2 years with that level of suffering, it just gave me something. It gave me the power, I think, to help other people, to be able to hold their pain, to not be frightened, and to just keep going. Okay, what do I need to do next? What knowledge am I lacking? How can I make this easier for people than it was for me? And that's what pushed me first to want to train as a yoga therapist after I had trained as a yoga teacher, and then to really go down the science route, because I thought not everybody needs to sit in silence day in and day out and do slow movements with breathing by themselves in the middle of Burma, you know, with mosquitoes eating them alive outside. Like, they don't need to go that way. There has to be a path that's more accessible. And I never envisioned where I would be right now. You know, people often say that, oh, you know, you've done all these great things. And I often think, I'm just me, like I'm nobody, really. You know, it's just, I got to this stage and then thought, oh, well, I don't know that piece of information, so I better go do that. Oh, well, it's not enough to read our articles, I better do a master's degree. And then people just kept inviting me to things along the way. And I never felt overwhelmed, because when compared to what I had been through, if you invited me to Parliament to speak, I felt like, yeah, I know what I'm talking about. I went every step, every breath, every pain. I studied and studied and studied as well. And so if you're asking me a question, I'll answer it. And things just kept going from there. And then I would meet somebody along the way, like, you know, bringing yoga to healthcare, which has become a huge thing for me. It wasn't originally my idea that I would do that. I just had a student on my very first minded yoga therapy training course say, how do we bring this into healthcare? And I was like, yeah, how do we bring it into healthcare? I've just been focusing on whoever presents to me that's suffering. And then, you know, I spoke to Sat Beer, who I had already met, and he has been such an inspiration. And he said, bring it to the doctors. So then I was lucky enough to be able to create a program at Boston Medical, at the Boston University School of Medicine, an elective. And then that became another stepping stone. And when I came back to the UK, I had that underneath my belt. And then, you know, I got invited to speak at Parliament about this. And then somebody else invited me. And then suddenly I'm moving in this direction of, okay, how do we consider this as a society? You know? And some things I feel like I've worked really, really hard for to achieve, and other things have just happened. And I felt like maybe this was meant to be my life path.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't know if this is what the right way, I don't know what the right way is.
It's perfect. Where I am listening in from is a generative field that we use in the Presencing Institute to allow the connection that isn't yet fully visible to be invited in further. And what I'm hearing you speak from, having had those encounters in your own personal journey, that something got opened up. And I just heard you kind of do a connect the dots of the what's next, the what's next, what's the next true move, one of my teachers loves to call it. And so relative to that perspective taking that gave you some momentum, right? Just to continue, there's a quality of momentum here and then direction based upon who you encountered and what was possible. Tell us, please, Heather, what were the ways in which you transformed the way in which you created relationships with these others into things that have societal benefit as a jumping stone?
Okay. So I guess, you know, like I said, I've been fortunate to, and you reiterated it, to connect to many people, a lot of those individuals in a place of influence. And I guess there were two aspects of that. One, I was moving down the science route in a very strong way. And I also had my legs strongly vouched in the spiritual. It wasn't like I was just coming from one or the other. I had lived for 3 years basically in silent retreat. That's a very intense thing to do. And also, I had done all of these academic degrees. So when I was presented with people very high up in healthcare, I could speak their language, but also connect to them in that personal way around what it is to be a human being and how we all are struggling and how things can change, and then place that in scientific language. So that was very convincing. And I did the same with people within the parliamentary sector. You know, I've always tried to understand where people are coming from. I think that one of the other things that's made it really possible for me in transforming those relationships is I have never ever felt that anything was impossible. I always felt I just needed to understand something different than what I knew now. Think outside of the box. And I have not taken my lead as to how to succeed moving forward from anybody else. I've just trusted my mind that's come from my meditation. Okay, what am I not seeing? How can I do this differently? What does this person need to hear to be willing, for example, to be open to creating the all-party parliamentary group? And I also recognize that as somebody on the spiritual path, that nobody can be used for something, like as a stepping stone, like I need this person for this, so I'm just going to pull them out and work with them in that particular way and manipulate the situation so I can have what I want. It's always been about, okay, this is a real human being that can unlock something for me, but it means unlocking something for them as well. So if I'm going to work with them, how do they become my colleague? How do they become my friend? And where's the common ground? And if that's not possible, I don't work with people. you know, all of the parliamentarians that I've had the pleasure to work with, for example, have become my friends. A lot of people that I work with in health policy, they've become my friends, because that relationship has to be part of the process of growth. And they won't be on board for the long haul otherwise. And my life won't be imbued with any meaning if everybody's just my colleague, because I work so much. So there has to be real connection. And I think that that enduring connection also has made a real difference. My commitment to creating a Sangha around my mission. I don't think I've ever described things in this way to anybody. It's interesting, you know?
Yeah, thank you for agreeing to land here in this moment with me. I appreciate it. So these qualities of moving from me to we, is related to seeing and sensing a system. And so from that quality of understanding that there's the many intelligence that begin to integrate from the benefit of personal practice, what I'm hearing from more of a multidimensional awareness-based practice for social renewal is that you're really understanding, and I know readers would love to learn more about your challenges in those relationships, but more particularly from the perspective of something that I'm finding helps people stay spiritual, that there's a co-initiation that goes on. Like you said, it's not just that I want to grab them for my purpose, that it somehow has to relate to their shared truth as well. Can you talk to us a little bit about how you kind of edge yourself into that, or what's the direction of your awareness as you sense into that system that might be opening to this capacity building that you so perfectly represent in bringing yoga into healthcare through political processes?
I want to know what matters to them. I mean, I sit and I really listen in the beginning. I've watched other people do a pitch. This is what I want to do. This is what I want to do. This is why, this is why, this is why. And if you have 30 seconds, maybe that's what you do. But I don't do that with people. I've had that experience recently where somebody was pitching to me. And I was just like, oh God, it's giving me a headache. Instead, I sit and I listen, you know? If there's somebody that can unlock the key, I really listen and I hear what matters. And I have also an entrepreneurial mind with everything else. I'm like, that's the connection. It's a spiritual kind of entrepreneurial, or we could just talk of it as, where's the creation bit here? That's it. That's what matters to you and that's what matters to me. And I've been listening long enough to actually hear rather than tell you.
Okay.
I think that is so incredibly vital, and people do want to talk. If you really want to listen to what they have to say and what's important to them, they want to talk. And most people, at least the people that I meet, are passionate about something. And you know, I'm probably not going to have success with somebody who is totally focused only on themselves.
Okay. Okay, beautiful. Thank you. So I'm getting a picture as I listen to you, particularly when your hands came together, of that kind of represented this co-creativity piece. And it opens up the citta and how prana flows from more of a yogic perspective. What is it that you've learned about co-evolving creativity? Those are two words that we use in the Presencing Institute. But what's your understanding of this creative force that I hear you really grounded in?
I don't know what my understanding of it is. It's just an energy. It's not a named thing. It's not that I sit there and say, it's here now. It's just, I'll sit there and there's a very different energy than what comes up with ego. Like, I want this, I want this, I want this so much. And that doesn't tend to bear that kind of fruit, as opposed to, okay, what does the world really need? It's getting to the crux of that. And all I can describe it is like a flow inside myself. It's like when I arrive there, it feels aligned. It feels clean. It doesn't feel agitated. And there might be later a lot of dross and difficulty to make something actually happen, but the idea of the project just seems fluid, clear.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Thank you.
And I also think, and I know this is not exactly your question, but although I have an agenda, I don't push my agenda down people's throats. I don't think that works, which is, again, that co-creation bit. It's like, okay, you're telling me you want this. I'm not going to sit there and constantly try to bring you over here. You're not going to come here, and if you do so, it's begrudgingly. That's the piece of, like, honoring of the we, but also of the other, you know? And I think that I bring that to a lot of my teaching as well. When somebody challenges me that's in a group and they're afraid that I'm going to come down on them and say, no, that's not true, I really hear them. I want to know what they have to say. I thank them for their question because I think that we need to constantly remain open and adaptive. And maybe that's the piece coming from my spiritual practice that my teacher told me that if you hold an opinion, and you attach to an opinion, you're at the lowest level of mind. So you always have to know that what you perceive and think is subject to being incorrect, inaccurate, and should be able to be reformed. Mm-hmm. And I really reform rather than reform, you know? Yeah. And so I think that that really serves me because somebody gives me new information and my mind goes, okay, here's a new way of seeing the whole thing. It does it very quickly. And that's because of my practice.
Got it. Thank you. So what came to me when I was listening to you, and I'm wanting this to be for the benefit of the readers too, who are suffering, that this somehow, there's so much written about the seeing in the dark, you know, in literature and the beauty of the still invisible or the pre-dawn moment that we also love as meditators. I'm wondering, from your body-centered experience, you know, that kind of more visceral part that I hear very active in you, the not-thinking part, is there a way in which you might pull some words out for the readers from that seeing in the dark place, those little threshold moments when it lands in you? Can you speak a little bit more about that moment, that threshold moment, when it comes clear to you before the planning and doing and all that stuff starts?
I think that moment is like, okay, I'll give the language, but I need to give context. So I'll ask something of my mind. I need this. And then my mind will go into analysis and it'll go and back and forth and back and forth and it won't rest. And then there'll be this moment where suddenly all of the sounds, all of the noise stops in my mind. There'll be this moment of clarity with less chatter. And in that moment, there will be an absolute knowing that this idea that has come from the source, from something, is clear and it's going to work. The feeling associated with that is just one of ease. It's one like my body almost feels flaccid in that moment, like the muscles go loose. And I know, and I always trust those moments because I've had them for many of the things that I've created. The all-party parliamentary group, the yoga and healthcare conference, recently HealthFlix that I put together. And once I have them, I usually drive myself crazy creating that thing. That's the reality. I'd like to say that the process is all just completely ease, but that's not true. But the understanding that that needs to happen in the world and that that's going to work is unequivocal. And there's no, after that, the chatter goes away. Is this right? Is this wrong? There's no question. It's just yes.
Okay.
I can't, okay. Yeah, sorry. I don't know if that's answering your question exactly.
It does, because that's who you are. And as, I'm just going to use this more leadership-oriented word, as an influencer, there are other people who've then entered your space and have assisted in the implementation, the energizing, the further development of those ideas. What people are interested in now is how did you continuously cultivate those relationships? And is there anything, if we were to peek around the corner into the future now, Heather, mm-hmm. kind of in that ecological, letting the beam of attention come back into the self-reflective space, where are you seeing, feeling, sensing, let's just call them the divine spark impulses, land for others to benefit from? Can you reach into that space, really the harvesting space, the already having seeded and then growing space? What's that vision? And how do others learn from you to trust that vision?
So I'm not sure I completely understand what you're asking. I'm trying to, because I want to. Can you maybe describe it
slightly? Yeah, I'll go with different words. So if you're embedded in a system of transformation as an individual, right, and you perfectly mapped out how it works for you to invite the inspiration as an individual, this quality of connecting to others through the core team or other co-conspirers for a project, whatever, mm-hmm. actually also lands in the ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And so if our abilities are shifting into an ecosystem awareness that we can actually see and sense from the system that is evolving around us, our individual sparks are just one piece of the embedded action. And so what are the skills and attributes that you might look back on as a leader that you have been cultivating? Does that help? Different path.
I think so. And I guess you'll know from my answer if I understood the question. I think that, one, I watch very closely as to what people want. I'm always paying attention to that. You know, also as a businesswoman, what do people want? I don't necessarily come from the perspective of what do I need to teach. Sometimes I do that. But I'm really trying to understand what people need. I think the first thing is real listening. I really listen to my students on the training, because the Minded Institute is always morphing. We don't ever stand still. And I know that some of my team would like me to at times, but I'm hearing the students. I'm opened. I think I'm not afraid of criticism. You know, I was taught, and this doesn't necessarily come from my spiritual practice, but probably from my parents, that people who criticize you kindly are not trying to chip away. They see something in you and they want you to grow.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of my leadership skills is being able to take critique as an opportunity. And that has always allowed me to grow. The next is to understand and look at people's ability to work collaboratively on maybe what my bigger vision is, by understanding what their skill base is. And again, coming back to what's important to them. So how can my vision, what it was, expand larger so that it's meaningful to them? Not, again, not being manipulative and trying to convince them somehow that my vision is their vision, but how can it expand? So I think a leadership skill is cognitive flexibility, a constant cognitive flexibility, a responsiveness rather than being bossy. And sometimes in my industry and other industries, I watch these leaders who are bossy and I think, oh, they're so much more successful than I am because they tell people what to do and people just fall in line. But I could never come to the world in that way. I wouldn't feel like, I couldn't sleep with myself at night if I made people feel suppressed. Maybe it's part of not making people feel how when I was growing up, like I couldn't be myself. So it's just that constant willingness to expand. And then alongside that, also knowing, and I'm very bad at this, when expansion's no longer necessary. And when What you planted needs to take root, and you just take a moment and you wait and you also trust so that you're not constantly growing and changing and transforming every second, because you can't keep up with that either.
Okay. Yeah. No, that was beautiful. And what I am observing from more of an esoteric practice perspective is this expanding and contracting. So the way in which I'm listening into the way your ideas open you, and then as you collect people who you can care for to establish a platform for something to grow, there's a question that I have for you as we kind of wind it down so that we can take the space before our next. I'm interested, you had your 3 years sit. You had your opening experience in the 3 years sit. What I'm curious about, and I don't know where this is coming from, Heather, that you have a direction of your focus that has its own life. And what I just heard you speak to was that there's this need to somehow let it lie for a little while. Can you speak a little bit about that resting, that incubation time that you indirectly spoke to as a leader working now with more people, what that in-between time is, and what do you do with your creative impulse during that space?
So, okay. First of all, and this is just because I'm speaking in truth, I usually get to that place when I've kind of overextended, and I get tired, you know? I built up an enormous amount of discipline living in that monastery, and I can keep going and going and going and creating and creating and creating. And then there'll be a point where my body is like, no more. And I feel like it's this spiritual energy running through me, because it's like, that's enough now. Come back to your space. And usually at that time, something happens for me where like, I no longer care about how everything's going to land, because I've pushed myself so far, but it feels like an energy bigger than me. You know, it's like it's been created. I've pushed and pushed and pushed, and it's gotten to this point. And also I'm just like, whatever happens, happens, and I'm tired. And I restore myself during that time. But like clockwork, it's in that restoration period that magic seems to always happen. So I feel over the years that there is this spiritual energy running through me, and that the universe is saying, okay, don't be lazy, don't be complacent, make things happen. And then you have to learn to let go and let go and trust. And if you truly trust, then what you planted, it's going to keep growing. You're not going to come to a barren field later, because you did so much, but now it's time for the rain to do some of the work and the oxygen to do some of the work. And so I think it's very hard to trust. And I think it's hard to have the balance between being a very energetic person, if you want to make change, and then letting go. Or if you're somebody that always lets go, to realize that you also need to be active in the world. But it's that process and finding how you need to flow with not that, not necessarily based on how many more emails and conversations do you need to have, but like, okay, this is my edge. It's me telling myself, and some maybe the universe speaking it to itself, saying, that's enough now. So I don't feel like I make those decisions, actually. Yeah. They happen.
Okay. No, that's exactly the quality of a leader. So let's just frame this again. Remember, these are for the readers who may want to come into the yoga therapy world as it evolves into something that they can choose, right? There are many opportunities. And so if these narratives, Heather, yours being one, invites this transformational spiritual energy to flow through the practitioner to the social field, right? That which you are creating. Please tell us as we end, what have been the most influential practices, not during your out time, but during your in time, your cultivation practices?
Okay. So first of all, you know, I constantly teach all the time, do this, do this, do this. This has this benefit. This has this benefit. But that's not how it works for me. I need to sit, and I've done enough meditation to say, what do I need? So there isn't this practice. The first practice is the honest awareness of what I need in order to meet the energy and to restore myself. Sometimes it's ujjayi breath, which I do a lot of, you know, at different rates. Sometimes my body and mind say to me, just watch us. We can't transform anything more right now. All we want is waiting, and I honor that. Sometimes I need to go to nature, and I need something to reabsorb from, and I know that too. So I think the ultimate first bit is the awareness of what am I truly needing and honoring it, and maybe testing a few things out and not pushing through at that time, because that time is not about any pushing through. And then sensing into what needs to happen next, what needs to happen next. Sometimes it's loving kindness for myself and for the world. Sometimes it's weird stuff like going to the forest and, you know, basically lying on the ground in a star shape for an hour and doing nothing and looking up at the sky. Sometimes it's I write music. It's going back to writing music. But it's that same quality, I guess, that I was talking about. And I've never thought about that. It's just listening to myself. It's not telling me that I must do that thing. It's saying, what do I need to hear to be aligned? And then focus on. It's the same that I do with people rather than telling them. And, you know, and I know that this is Buddhist more than yogic, but there are some sayings in the Buddhist suttas, you know, that there isn't one panacea. And anybody that thinks that they can just come back to one practice and it will always serve them will be disappointed. And that the true practice is the self-awareness to understand what you need in a moment.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
And so with that large swath of experience that you've shared with us and your deep learning, and then also enacting this whole process of the Presenting Institute's approach to moving through this capacity that we have to redirect our attention to continuously let go so that we can land in source. You were speaking about it, this asking, who am I, what do I need in this moment? But then these capacities to kind of climb up into something that crystallizes in the mind body, and then inviting others to act with you, acting in an instant, is really the way in which this theory works. And as I listen to you today, the integration, not of yourself and what yourself is saying, Heather, but I'm actually looking at the space behind you somehow in the way, and I'm listening. And it reminds me, you know, of the emptiness practices in Buddhism. And so I just want to name that in this funky Zoom environment, that through the inquiries that you've spoken about, it's almost like these bubbles of creativity and innovation just kind of pop up, and that's something that you've learned to pay attention to and then give them life through your entrepreneurship. So these are unusual weavings of these many skills. And as we end in these last moments, this weaving, right, these ancient practices of the warp and woof from all of the traditional writings and music that really come through us now, is there anything else? I mean, you were eating this beautiful ice cream with the rice paper. So, I mean, those are, that's similar to the contrast frame that I hear you living into without judgment about all these very complex parts. So just drop in again, if you could, and let us learn from that inner music that you listen to that's very very clear in a certain way. At least that's what I'm hearing from your words.
I will drop into, I just want to tell you something though about what you just said. I hear music all the time. I have a soundtrack to my life.
I picked it up. I don't know. I picked it up. Yes.
Yeah. And that's also a way that I know what's happening for me. Sometimes my mind will start singing a song and I don't even realize it. Sometimes that's how I know I've fallen in love with somebody or that I'm not feeling okay in a moment because I didn't even realize it. A song with the perfect lyrics just comes up. But anyway, I don't know where comes from that. I don't know why that happens to me, but
okay. Or even just an image, whatever shows up, or a song.
What comes up is there is light in me and I trust myself. And even if it is hard, and even if I am confused, I believe in that light and that light never goes out. And as I operate in integrity, the doors of my path continue to flow opened almost in this magical way because I'm aligning myself with what life wants. And if I go against that, the universe will pin me back into my space and freeze me. So my process of a radical is a constant one of needing to realign with integrity and truth. Let me see if anything else comes up. And being honest about my shadow too. I don't pretend to be better than who I am. And I'm very imperfect and screwed up like the rest of us. And I don't want to say that I'm other than that. That's such an important part of this path, is saying I'm not a guru. I don't want to be one. I struggle. And I'm real, and I'm frightened. It's the mixing of the complexity, like you said, it's the honesty of all of the different parts and letting them just reside in me. And then magically, I guess they come in together into something, the parts of me that are clear, the parts of me that are murky, the parts of me that have integrity, the parts of me that don't always, you know, like all of us, and just allowing them to come together and then trying to use the best aspects of those. And an unflappable belief that everything is possible. And that doesn't fail for me, except reversing climate change. That's the one that hits me that I feel like hopeless around. But everything else seems possible.
So let's hold that as we come to the close. This beautiful contrast that you spoke about relative to your inner music and listening as an individual to this one big thing that we're all facing here on the planet, and to welcome any, as you called it, flexibility in the way that we hold our relationship to this big force of the big other that still is to be revealed. And so, quality of attention that you shared today, I want to just notice and welcome, and to invite all the elements that you seem to have such a great dance with. may these words that you've shared continue to land within those seemingly impermeable structures and help the planet to, yeah. This opening to the new, Heather. This is the last piece. And just to frame that, you've already spoken about it. I just want to name it, this opening to the new, however it shows up. And wherever it shows up.
Thank you. It's not like, namaste. It's not like any interview I ever did. And I wonder if I gave you what you needed, you know, because I was just really in the flow and I'm not used to doing it like that. I prepare for answering questions in kind of a linear way. And this was very different for me, but it was very real. And I just hope that it fulfilled what you needed.
It's the roundness of these new questions that keep us kind of in this feeling of we don't know where to land yet. And that's part of the evocation of the interview process that I'm trying to help people get inspired to do practice so they can listen. That's all. We don't know yet. And so that's the place. Thank you for staying present for our time together. I am deeply honored. I will not share the Zoom unless you want it. I'm happy to send it to you if you'd like. It's kind of fun.
How it looks, yeah. But I really, really enjoyed this with you. And I mean that, it felt beautiful. It felt deep and just totally honest. I really, really liked it. You know, thank you.
I'm here to kind of help shape those who have already taken action to find each other through this renewal process that everybody's doing. Mm-hmm. And this was really, I'm at the end of my formal career now, Heather. I did all this stuff and mm-hmm. now I have the blessing of being in a householding situation and being fine, but I'm being called out. So thank you for responding. I'm being nudged. You know, I get the nudges. You like you. We have a similar process. Anyway, I leave you now. I'll be in touch. I'll have to get a little more bio type stuff from you.
No problem. No problem. So much, Ellie.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.